source for federal news now.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
And our special guest today is David Zapiri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer. David, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, let's start with some basics. The mission of the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, OPIC. Give us, what do you guys do? What do you guys hope to accomplish?
Well, from a thumbnail perspective, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation supports investment in more than 150 overseas emerging markets. So we try to transition economies overseas, facilitate economic growth by supporting private investment in projects sponsored by private enterprises. We do direct loans, indirect loans. We have some housing projects. And so we really operate on a self-sustaining basis. We're a unique government organization where we actually made a profit the last couple years, and we turned that money back into Treasury. So it's a self-sustaining basis, supporting commercially viable projects on different forms of investment, and that's done overseas and international markets.
That was my next question. Obviously, everything's overseas, so you guys are probably focused, obviously, on those markets.
No, you know, if I may interrupt for a minute, when I first came to OPIC, I actually caught a briefing. It was funny talking about the acronyms, you know, in government. So the guy told me, hey, well, you know, Overseas Private Investment Corporation, and then he went back to say, well, we honestly don't have any overseas offices. We're not really private, you know, we're public from a government agency. We're not an investment, and we're not actually a corporation. So the naming of the agency is kind of, you know, strange from that perspective.
It's a great story because in many ways, everything you do, the whole name is a misnomer, but you obviously provide a very important service. Now, you guys are considered a small agency. You are among the executive branch. You're not a quasi-government agency. Is that correct?
Correct. And we, matter of fact, I don't know if you noticed, we just were announced the second best place to work in that category of small agencies within the government.
Actually, when I was visiting your website and when I read the Partnership for Public Services report, obviously that was one of the things that came out, which is obviously always good news when you can get that kind of recognition for helping your employees be happy. Let's talk about your job as CIO. How do you as CIO support OPIC's mission? You talked a lot about a couple things, loans, grants, so I'm sure there's a lot of those systems that you are in charge of, but talk about your support for OPIC's mission.
I've been over at Overseas Private Investment Corporation, probably going on my fourth or fifth year. Initially, when I got there, I kind of focused on being a good service provider, like any CIO. You know, that means you got to deal with all the problems associated with continuity in your infrastructure. You know, give them their Blackberries, give them their desktops. And so after you stabilize that, which I did, and, you know, got that certified, eliminated some audit issues, and then now I'm progressing trying to deal with becoming a solid business partner, which means, again, I'm turning my focus towards the application portfolio, you know, trying to figure out how do I support those core competencies you just mentioned. And we're in the midst of deploying a Oracle E-Business Suite application, not a complete ERP, but it's very similar, that will actually take the loan process cradle to grave and eventually deploy that throughout the agency.
All right, you gave us a little bit of a hint of your priorities. I'm going to go back to that Oracle system in a little bit.
Okay.
But before, let me ask you, as you support that mission, it sounds like you came in, you were focused on operations, and now you're moving over to strategy. Are you seeing a big change in terms of where you're spending your time?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And to tell you the truth, we actually have a new administration that's still kind of trickling in here from a political perspective. And, you know, so I was in the midst of evergreening my strategic plan anyway. But as that new socialization of priorities comes from the new administration, you know, naturally I got to tweak my alignment, which does focus on some new priorities that are coming down from the front office. But it's an exciting time, you know, very dynamic. I got some good support in terms of some new IT projects actually working with the lines, like you said, to facilitate meeting their missions overseas.
And as far as where you sit in the organization as a CIO, obviously you're among the executive leadership team. Do you answer obviously to the CFO? Do you answer to the chairman of the commission?
I'm one step down from the CEO, and I report to the chief of staff. Okay. But I am, like you said, part of the executive leadership team.
And let's talk about your office a little bit. How big is it? How many employees do you have? How many contract employees do you have versus federal? Your IT budget for 2010? Give us some sense.
Currently today, the office of the chief information officer consists of around 15 federal staff and probably twice as much on the contractual side. So I think have around 30 to 40 of contractors that support us on a whole range of services. And my FY 2010 IT budget was around $6-7 million. And then naturally there's some other reimbursables and other things that grows based on fluctuating priorities here at OPIC. The entire agency is rather a small size, like I said, in the range of around 350 federal and contractor staff. We're all located in a single location, so we have a centralized network infrastructure and a decentralized data center operation where we actually outsourced all our production Unix boxes at a site in Austin, Texas. So kind of did cloud computing before it got too popular. So we've been there for 3 years, and that's been a good decision.
All right. Well, definitely I want to ask more about cloud computing because it's a big issue, a big buzzword around government. Well, let me step back. You're about a 2-to-1 ratio contractors to feds in terms of employees in the OCIO office. Is that a good ratio? Is that where you want it? Do you want to raise the number of feds? Do you want to raise the number of contractors?
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm actually seeing a trend going back the other way. So instead of outsourcing, we're starting to look at the feasibility of insourcing. So currently today, like I said, that ratio has been very successful. We've got some great contract support on multiple fronts. And the interesting aspect of that is you kind of move away from the IT pendulum where my focus with my human capital on the government side is actually becoming more program management oriented and, wearing the hat of a contracting official. So, they accept and make sure we get the appropriate deliverables and review cost, schedule, and performance on all those contracts. And then in the meantime, we're also moving toward idle compliance. So that shift is there, and I have certainly enough government slots, and they're still in the technical series of information technology specialists. So they're well-rounded individuals that can handle pretty much everything that I just mentioned.
Well, I know that those people obviously are in short supply who can understand the IT aspect, but also the program management, the contracting angle. So you better hold on to them, otherwise some other agency will try to steal them.
Well, isn't that the truth? you're right.
Yeah, well, it's a common thing we hear about government. Let me ask you another question about the setup. You said your network is fairly a centralized infrastructure, but a decentralized data center. How does that help you as the CIO kind of manage upgrades, cybersecurity, patching? Talk about that process, not specifics of programs, but just the process about how USCIO does that.
Our production environment that we decided to move to the platform as a service was really Unix. And to tell you the truth, based on the small limited staff I had mentioned in terms of human capital, we had some issues there in terms of going through a certified and accredited process. I had a whole list of vulnerabilities, and I sat back and I looked at it and I said, oh, good grief, in terms of not being able to actually restore quickly and looking at the current patch levels on those boxes. I had a list of almost probably 5 months worth of work to correct that. And that's what I said that was a compelling case for change, where I said, it certainly would be a lot easier if we could consider taking this important production environment that hosts all our Oracle applications that we use here at OPIC. And we did just that. So we did some market research, put it out, and ended up with a decision to put it in Austin at an Oracle On Demand site. So now I have the benefit of, paying an annual fee, and they handle all those concerns, in terms of reliability, uptime, redundancy, all the patch management, and upgrades to the software. And it's let us focus here locally on the other portions of the network infrastructure, and that's currently under a contract with General Dynamics, and they do all our local patch management on Windows servers and, the BlackBerry Enterprise servers, because we use BlackBerries here at OPIC. And so based on the lessons learned and the cost avoidance associated with the win on the cloud computing at the Austin Data Center, I'm now in the process of doing the same steps with market research, building a solid business case to actually consider getting the Exchange servers outsourced, because based with some new priorities coming down in terms of being able to reconstitute email in short order through continuity of ops, I'm running into the same problem. I just don't have enough people and dollars here to sustain it myself. So that's also on the horizon.
All right. Well, you're jumping ahead of me, but so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of those priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is David Zapiri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is David Zapiri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer. Now, David, before break, you got a little bit ahead of my question, so I appreciate that. You give us a glimpse of some of your priorities. I'm going to start with the first one you mentioned, the deployment of the e-business suite application from Oracle to help with the loan processing from, as you said, cradle to grave. Give us an idea of what you're doing there. What's the status? When's the implementation timeline?
The product is actually called Oracle Loans. It ties into the e-business suite. So naturally, everything on the back end on the database side is all Oracle hosted. Our authoritative book of record here has been in production from a general ledger perspective using Oracle Government Financials for 9 years. So, you know, we have accounts receivable, accounts payable, Fed admin, and some other products there that kind of plug and play into that enterprise architecture all the way through. We've actually started Oracle Loans probably about 24 months ago. We put together an integrated product team to actually bound the functional requirements. You know, that's some discipline I learned when I was in DOD that seems to help minimize slippage from a software development lifecycle perspective. So we have representation from all the lines of business at OPIC in terms of that. It's going pretty well in terms of the targeted timeline. We're hoping to possibly go live here by April 1st of this upcoming year. And that also includes, you know, migration of data from a legacy app that, you know, kind of had some high risk associated with, you know, vendor dependence and old obsolete platform, and just a compelling case. We had to move forward in terms of getting off that legacy system, and they were looking for some credit reform advancements and some other things in terms of how we process loans at OPIC. And like I said, after doing a high level analysis of alternatives, we selected the Oracle Loans project, and we're targeted again to go live April 1st.
All right, so that's coming up about 6 or 8 months to go. How much of a difference is this going to make for you guys having this new system in there? Is it more of a, it's going to make understanding data easier? Is it a process issue? Are people going to see the changes on the front end? What's the benefits?
The benefits, again, is actually having a single version of the truth from a data perspective. There will be some process improvement all the way through in terms of how we do workflow and certain disciplines within that workflow. On the front end, that will be step two. We're going to actually then, you know, after we successfully call a win on the Oracle Loans project, on the front end, then we're going to actually start looking at the loan origination process. So again, the flexibility is the architecture associated with the software and the platform that we chose with Oracle, and the constant progress really coming in terms of the capability and the credit reform compliance, the legislative mandates, the transparency, FATA, you know, all those things that are very important to our user base.
The other thing you mentioned in the same kind of idea is the outsourcing to Oracle on demand for a lot of your data center needs. And I think that's interesting because what's going on across government is this look at cloud computing, which, as you said, you're a little bit ahead of the curve. What are some of the challenges or that you've seen from that move? What are some of the benefits?
I guess some of the challenges really is the scalability and response time. That's been somewhat of an issue. You know, some surprises. So if you try to mirror your processes from, you know, development, test, and production, every time you set up a new instance, you know, that kind of out of your control, you know, in terms of the timing of it. It is a federal protected zone, so we can share. We have flexibility in terms of, you know, how you scale particular instances or have transition on the hardware side. Benefits is it's been fantastic. So all those prior problems I mentioned to you coming out of the CNA process in terms of vulnerabilities, patch levels, application upgrades, all that has been fantastic. We're very excited in terms of the support we've been getting in terms of the hosted application as well as the sustainment of the environment.
You mentioned security, and that's a big issue. Do you guys go and certify and accredit Oracle every year, every 6 months? Do you do kind of surprise visits to make sure that the security is up to par?
We did actually tour the data center before we made the decision, and I was very impressed. I mean, like I said, I used to work for DOD, so I've been in DOD mega centers maintained by DISA, and I worked at Homeland Security, and I also worked at the Department of Justice. So I certainly feel I've seen some of the best operated data centers in the country throughout my career, and the one I saw and toured and made the decision on actually ranks very highly. They have a very structured, disciplined process in terms of how things are done. They're documented with performance metrics through an agreed-upon service-level agreement. The security concerns were minimized immediately, and naturally, we don't take that lightly. We did go there. We do not CNA. We have an open door if we want to come back and actually review their process, but they're SAS 70 compliant. We actually have a copy of that in a contract folder, and that is more than suffice in terms of meeting what we need in terms of FISMA.
Because I think that's a big question for a lot of non-government entities who are trying to provide this service. Not only are they FISMA compliant, but what level, low, medium, or high, and then can we check it, and how often can we check it? And you brought up the service level agreements. Was that a tough thing to put in place?
We have some IT research companies. We use that, and we did try to attain some templates and some guidance associated with which way to go. But I think it is somewhat unique based on your culture and your expectations in terms of response time and your unique software development lifecycle, your governance gate. So yeah, we kind of had to build that. I'd say not completely from scratch. We leveraged some items that we attained, but that was somewhat of the most difficult time consumption associated with the entire transition. But it was a good process because, you had mutual benefit and discussion on both sides in terms of bi-direction between the vendor and the government agency, and I think that brought us closer in terms of making everything successful.
Do you have any specific advice to other agencies, other CIOs who are, starting on this path, whether they're large agencies or small ones?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, you have to thoroughly think through where you are in terms of your technical requirements that are tied back to the purpose of why you're outsourcing a particular platform, and think through that. And, we had a IVNV type contractor, independent validation and verification, that actually kind of, overlooks and oversees and gives me an independent assessment associated with where my high-risk items are. So we also engage that vendor support to take a look at, where we were today. So naturally, I told you I had a list of associated problems that needed to be addressed. And then we took them one by one as we actually, built foundation up through the SLA and then make sure that we had the appropriate metrics, the old adage that you can't manage what you don't measure. And I think it's very important, like I said, to come to consensus on both sides to make sure that, that mutual trust is there, because it is a relationship. And the quickest way for a CIO to get in the hot seat is actually bring down your mission critical apps due to infrastructure mistakes.
That is the truth, yes. Nothing gets you in more trouble than doing that. I want to go back one thing as well, because you mentioned the idea of making this decision. And you guys, as you said earlier in our conversation, are just going down that path to start with the business case, doing your market research, but potentially moving your email exchange servers, to manage services. Talk about the timeline around that. Is that an RFP that vendors should be looking out for? Is that something that you guys are going to do with existing contractors?
Sure. Our acquisition strategy will be some type of open solicitation. I'm not sure whether or not we'll, based on the market research, you put together maybe a dozen short lists of vendors based on what we're trying to do on GSA schedule. That may be a viable option. The timeline for that will definitely be in 2011 and probably in the first half. Again, I told you it's kind of being driven by some requirements that I cannot meet currently today from a human capital perspective as well as an infrastructure perspective of reconstituting my data center as a Tier 3 agency, coming out of the Homeland Security in terms of certain requirements. And the easiest means to an end was actually considering outsourcing the platform in totality. And I'll tell you and share that based on the numbers that we're gathering at this point through the business case, the cost avoidance is rather exciting. writing. You know, what I'm currently spending, I'm not going to give you specifics, but it is there. And, you know, there's always been a lot of concern associated with, you know, the documentation associated with the return on the investment of cloud computing. I've read everything. I've heard, you know, other CIOs on panels across the Beltway. But in terms of my understanding and the successes we've gained, it is definitely clearly documented. And I expect even more savings associated with this transition of outsourcing exchange.
Are you able to give us any kind of estimate of the cost avoidance from the data center move that you guys did to Oracle On Demand?
That one's a little bit more difficult based on some of the software applications and the uniqueness that I put in the SLA. But the savings at a minimum on the exchange side that we're seeing so far is up near 30 to 40%.
All right. Well, on that, we're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of your other priorities that you're hoping to accomplish over the next year or so. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is David Zapieri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is David Zapieri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer. Now, David, we talked about your lot of your priorities, the moving to Oracle On Demand and how that's going, a new e-business suite from Oracle. We also talked about some of the cloud computing things you're doing. You probably have some other priorities, too, that you want to work on over the next 6 or 9 months. Give us a sense of what you're hoping to accomplish.
Well, one major investment is an infrastructure modernization program. So that kind of has all kinds of other tentacles associated with it. Like, we're trying to actually virtualize all our servers. We're implementing new configuration management software where we're trying to make sure that we apply information technology integrated library idle compliancy, which actually puts a lot more discipline into our change management process and all the code that we're actually delivering. And I also just recently got control of the responsibility of records management. So actual NARA compliance and archived emails, offsite storage, all that is starting from the ground up as of today through the next 6 months. I'll be trying to do an assessment of where I am and validate that we have everything necessary to have a solid records management program.
Now, let me ask you, you talk about virtualization of your servers. Again, something we're hearing a lot about in government. A lot of people are looking at it. Where are you with that? Is that something that's just in the beginning stages? Have you already chosen to go down that path and you're slowly getting the servers virtualized?
No, we're pretty much at the end in terms of virtualizing the majority of our existing server base. I'd say we're at least over 70%. We might have about 30% remaining in terms of multiple operating systems. You know, we have Linux, we have Windows-based servers, and we even have some old legacy apps running on NT. So, the process in terms of that, we use VMware. Again, I told you we had engineering support on a contract currently with General Dynamics that actually perform it. And we've been happy with the progress and the savings associated with that.
Has there been a lot of challenges around virtualization, or has it been fairly smooth? The process is fairly straightforward.
I think it's been somewhat smooth. We've bumped into a few things associated with integration aspects associated with software that was running on servers. It could be anything from our firewall filtering software to, you know, pushing patches through Java and Adobe. So, like I said, not painful, definitely manageable, but there was a few unknowns associated with the virtualization process from that perspective. I wouldn't say it actually was holding up the progress, but you definitely want to share that and document it, or, you know, recommend to other CIOs to go talk to other people that have already virtualized several other servers. It might save them some time.
And then the other thing you mentioned, obviously, was the configuration management using ITIL compliance. Configuration management makes me think of the federal desktop core configuration. It makes me think of some of the things that the Office of Management and Budget was pushing over the last few years. The path you're heading down, or are you talking the different kind of...
Yes, no, that's it exactly. I mean, matter of fact, I'm proud of, we're already 100% compliant with the core configuration on all our desktops. And we actually took our image from 40 down to one standard image. We do technical refreshment on the entire infrastructure in annual cycles on a 3-year basis, which, you know, is very nice in government, you know, in terms of what we provide to our users at the desktop level is always tight and sharp and well maintained. And the configuration management also, you know, somewhat of a defensive audit posture. You know, you want to be ahead of the questions that are forthcoming to a CIO in terms of your change management processes. And we had to build that from the ground up. I mean, it's been a lot of work. And so, you know, from asset management to help desk tickets, I mean, all that service portfolio we're in the process of building, and it is complemented through the tool that we bought, and it is live in production today, and we're already starting to see the extreme benefits associated with applying that discipline.
It's amazing going from 40 images to one. I mean, that trying to keep your hands on 40 images, make sure they're secure and patched and not a cyber weakness, that must have been just really a tough chore.
It is, and the hardest part is socializing the change with your user base and the stakeholders that are kind of, you know, freewheeling and had some admin rights and had unique software for their particular, you know, everybody in the building has unique requirements, right?
Of course,
right?
Of course.
So as soon as you put that brush associated with even locking down the image with the FDCC and then trying to adjust and bring that standard image in place, it was somewhat of a challenge, but the benefits are astronomical. We've been clean on an audit perspective for the last 3 years, knock on wood. You know, in terms of that, those controls, you know, we're ahead on multiple fronts in terms of vulnerabilities and like I said, infrastructure refreshment, deployment of software is pushed through general policies. And I've actually seen, like I said, in terms of our uptime and reliability and certain metrics that we have on help desk, we're definitely seeing the benefit all the way around on the hard work being employed at OPIC.
Unfortunately, we're almost out of time, but before I let you go, I do want to discuss your background a little bit. You mentioned some of your other stops across government, DOD, DHS, Justice. How long have you been CIO at the Overseas Private Investment Corporation? And talk about some of your other experiences in government.
Sure, I'll do that real quick. I'm going close to my 29-30 year in the federal IT business. So I started working for DOD way back, whatever. I got about 10 to 15 years from a DOD perspective. And then I got my first senior executive service job working for Office of Justice Programs, where I was the CIO over there for 3 years. Then I went to Homeland for another 2.5 to 3 years. And I've been over here at OPIC getting ready to start my fourth or fifth year. So CIO with experience in a small, medium, and large agency. I've been the senior executive service for the past 10 to 11 years and a total 29 in government. So pretty well-rounded and exciting. And I love my job. Like I said, being a CIO in government is very challenging, but it also is very rewarding. You know, I've worked on some really interesting projects over the years and had some great experiences.
Yeah, you mentioned your time at Homeland Security. I think that's the first time we met. Were you at TSA or were...
I was. I was the CIO over at TSA.
That's why, because when I was looking to do this interview with you, I was like, I remember David. And to be honest, I didn't know where you had landed. And when you had come up at OPIC, I was pleased to see that. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, but this has been very interesting, and I've learned a lot about your organization. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is David Zapiri, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation's Chief Information Officer. David, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM WFED, your source for federal news now.